you gotta at least say something. Emerald Technologies is the local source for computer sales and services. They carry Apple and Windows laptops for every budget and custom-built desktop systems for gaming, video editing, and office work. They carry all kinds of cables, chargers, routers, printers, and whatever other gizmos you might need to get the job done. Since 1998, Emerald Technologies has worked to keep your computer alive and happy and out of the e-waste pile. Stop by their Garberville office just up the way from Ray's. Check out emeraldtech.biz or give them a call, 923-1268. It's 7:01. This is Redwood Community Radio, KMED Garberville, KMUE Eureka, KLAI Laytonville, where the views and opinions expressed throughout the broadcast day are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the station staff or underwriters. Time is made available for all sorts of viewpoints, and thank you all so much for choosing to listen to us. Get ready for Ask Your Herb Doctor. And we have the doctors in the house. I believe I do. Andrew, are you there? Do I got you, Andrew? Well, I thought I had Dr. Murray. I do have Dr. Pete here. Dr. Pete, do I have you?
I'm still here.
Okay, and I had a technical error, and I think... I'll be back. We're going to listen to the theme music for a song for a second here. We have one of the doctors, and I got to get Dr. Pete back.
Doctor? Engineer, are we on?
Yes, Dr. Murray, you are on.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to this month's Ask Your Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray. From 7 till 8 p.m., we run these shows every third Friday of the month. Ask Your Herb Doctor is the name of the show, and for the longest time now, we've been joined by Dr. Raymond Pete, Ph.D., who's been weighing in with his academic take on a lot of different subjects that are sometimes controversial and sometimes not, but always informative. So once again, we're very pleased to have Dr. Pete with us on the show. Are you there, Dr. Pete?
I'm getting Dr. Pete back right now.
Okay.
Yes, we have Dr. Pete on the line.
Hi, Dr. Pete. Thanks so much for giving your time again this evening. Okay, I don't hear Dr. Pete. I know this is a remote programming here, and we've had a few problems in the past.
Dr. Pete can hear you.
Barely.
I can't hear him.
I can barely hear him.
Huh.
Can you try now?
I did get that. I could hear that.
Well, launch in, and I think he can hear you too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. Well, let's start once again, and it's Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Garberville, 91.1 FM. From now until 8 o'clock at the end of the show, you're invited to call in with questions, hopefully related to this month's subject of epigenetics and some experimental cancer treatments and also a little bit of COVID catch-up. The number's 707-923-3911, sorry. So that's once again 707-923-3911 from 7:30 until the end of the show at 8. We're once again very pleased to have Dr. Raymond Pete with us. Dr. Pete, you with us?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Sorry about the technical difficulties. For those people who perhaps have never heard you before or would like to find out more about you, we'll give out your details at the end of the show. But would you please just give a roundup of your academic professional background so people can get an idea of where your work is coming from?
I was studying and teaching in the humanities for about 10 years before I decided to go to graduate school in biology, which was in 1968 to 1972, University of Oregon, where I got a PhD in reproductive physiology and aging. And my intention had been to study nerve biology when I went to the university, following up on ideas of how language and the brain work. But because of dogmatism in the nerve biology section, I ended up with reproductive physiology as a way to concentrate on interactions of hormones, metabolism, and development. Over the next almost 50 years, I've been continuing to study those areas.
And you've had quite a long history of actually consulting with people and firsthand. I won't say experimental because it's not experimental, but firsthand guidance with philosophies that you have formulated over time here, and much of what I've understood from you in the last 10 years has been related to energy production. I think I would sum that up in the terms of creative energy production and stemming the dissolution of energy, whether that is from a dietary perspective or a supplemental perspective. But tonight's show, again, it piqued my interest, and I cannot claim to be a scientist or knowledgeable in any way on the subject, but I have some definite questions I'd like to ask you and to also help to understand the subject a little more simply for listeners who perhaps don't have too much of a science background, but a lot of what you can bring out in epigenetics is very relevant in terms of understanding the simple concepts of it. So going to the term epigenetics, it's basically, I think I could sum it up by saying it's a heritable phenotype, the change of which does not involve alterations in the DNA sequence. Now, before I let you take the floor with the concept of epigenetics and I start to question you, I just want people to understand the two differences of phenotype and genotype when we're talking about genes and DNA and what they code for and what they do. The genotype gives the instruction, and the phenotype in an organism is its appearance. So I saw that an account, and the word environmental enrichment, which I know you'll bring out in the context of altering or rather adapting to the changes in epigenetics. The epigenetics themselves may account for a significant fraction of what they term the missing heritability, as DNA mutations only explained a minority of the expected heritable fraction, and they said that this discrepancy is known as the missing heritability. So when you describe epigenetics for our listeners, some of which may not be as science-based, if you could describe the basic outlines of epigenetics and how, whether it's DNA changes in methylation or the histones that the genes wrap around, or this non-coding RNA that get altered, and how the changes to those bring about profound changes in genetic information and what gets turned on and what gets turned off, and how this epigenetic change really alters the structure of our consciousness, I think, in a lot of ways, or conversely, our consciousness can alter the structure of our epigenetics. So would you just describe what it is that you understand as epigenetics and how they play into our health?
The established powers in biology have been very resistant to the idea that there could be any transgenerational influence of experience. And that has involved even reducing and emptying the idea of what happens during adaptation. Why does exercise build stronger muscles? And what happens during learning and developing new ideas. The very idea of change was resisted powerfully by the people who saw the organism as a compilation of specific traits once developed in infancy or achieving maturity. The idea was that our traits and our parts were like a clock mechanism, that the parts operated, allowed the machine to work, but nothing very deep was changing all during the adult lifetime. And that has an extensive ideological background in which the organism was seen as nothing but a compilation of parts, each of which is eternal and unchangeable. And the idea that the organism might be in some way deeply changing after has achieved maturity puts in doubt the whole idea that the immortal genes specify the traits that together make up the machine of the organism. The idea of the machine is intended to eliminate the idea that the parts are constantly changing. But in reality, when you look at the experience of yourself or of other organisms, you see that every day there's learning and change. So you can't really do anything twice, because the second time you do it is you're a different person. This idea really has a great biological significance, that every moment of your experience, you're in development all the way through your lifespan, and the immune system is constantly operating and recording your interactions with antigenic material or possible allergens or immunological stimulants, the same way actions and experiences change the way you interpret the world. The structure of your brain is constantly changing, and that interacts with your constantly changing immune system, and all the rest of your body is moment to moment undergoing adaptation. That it isn't just a technical, logical thing. The ideas that are constantly changing in your mind are actually changing the properties of the brain cells and of your immune cells, and probably all of the cells. No one has looked at every cell in the body, but pretty much every cell in the body, every functional cell is likely to have a fine nervous fiber. So the body isn't just chemically communicating like a swarm of insects attracted to the smell of honey or something, but there is a very deep penetration of fine nerve fibers into all of the tissues, integrating the whole body and its chemistry with the conscious purpose and ongoing behavior of the organism. Any little event happening in your body is also adding to the sum of development. Technically, people are using epigenetics just to mean certain chemical changes that persist from the state of one cell after that cell divides. But the persistence of a physiological state from moment to moment is really the simplest and most basic idea of epigenetics. Every moment we inherit the whole past of our organism, and the fact that we don't change drastically and unrecognizably is that there is a logic and a momentum in these developmental changes. The whole system is working in integration and with a rational set of goals. The extreme way, an analogy biologically, would be the transformation of a tadpole to a frog. That involves epigenetic changes of a very drastic sort, but it's good to keep that in mind as hidden out of sight. Our immune system and nervous system are having these constant little transformations or metamorphoses. So it's not as drastic as a tadpole turning into a frog, but our immune system and brain in particular are recognizably different over very short time spans.
Now, what you said a few moments ago caught my attention, and I kind of tried to sum it up as you. And again, this is not preaching or anything to those who have never really thought about the subject, but I think is a very good point in explaining adaptation and epigenetics and how it affects us psychologically in terms of what we believe. You reminds me that you are what you believe yourself to be, and that the subject of positive reinforcement or affirmations, positive affirmations, are seemingly a roadmap to a better future, because that is a way, in many ways, I think, of changing your perception, your outlook, your mental state, and your physical state therein by epigenetic changes that can occur purely through positive reinforcement.
Positive or negative, the environment to a great extent is imposing unpleasant degenerative
right.
changes on us. And for example, if you put an animal in isolation, social distancing, the animal
yep.
becomes more inflamed. The whole immune system is deranged in the direction of inflammation just by the depressing experience of being isolated
yeah.
from his friends. If you reverse that, do the opposite and give them lots of fun social contacts and lots of varied things to do, an enriched environment, that suppresses that. Ends the inflammatory processes and starts the organism back on the constructive developmental process away from the degenerative processes.
So in terms of... Go on.
These ideas have been known to common people for hundreds of years Lamarck, for example, said that if an organism needs longer legs or stronger arms or whatever, it will develop them by striving. Basically, exercise improves the physiology and structure. Anyone can see it happening as you change your life, your organism cooperates and becomes more efficient in that way of life. But the Darwinists didn't like that idea of the intelligence of the common person or the common organism. And they invented the assumption of randomness. It's a metaphysical idea created out of thin air that for some reason changes can only be random, and they did it to atoms. It said that the change of one type of atom to another can only be random and unpredictable. Nuclear transmutations are a chance event, and they applied that to biological changes. At first, the traits were immortal and unchanging. Then when they saw mutations actual changes happening, they said those are only completely random and useless. And the mechanism of intelligent adaptation, learning learning to play the flute or the trumpet or something, you have to develop muscular skills, mental skills, and change your organism to do that. But that kind of adaptation, they created a way to see it as simply a summing up of many of meaningless random diffusions of molecules through the system. You change your behavior, and the modifications that happen in result as a result of that changed behavior involve random diffusion of particles that end up changing the genes. But the whole idea of avoiding purposefulness at every point of life processes, that has been going on now for about 200 years.
Okay, you're listening to Ask Your Herb, Dr. KMUD, Garberville, 91.1 FM from 7:30 until the end of the show. You're invited to call in the questions. The number is 707-923-3911. Dr. Raymond Pete, our guest speaker. Dr. Pete, you talked about moment-to-moment changes, and you've described the process by which epigenetics can affect us, definitely negatively from a inflammatory point of view. And you've also mentioned that stresses, and you mentioned isolation, and I think in response to COVID and the isolation that's been imposed upon the masses, as well as authoritarianism, which has been put on every continent of the planet by pretty much every government and their people, and deficiencies in freedom, deficiencies in social engagement, the decreases in any kind of creative outlets, whether it's yoga, exercise, meeting people for, you know, discussion groups, et cetera, all of these things definitely could be construed in the context of epigenetics as being very negative for us in terms of whilst our DNA might not physically change, the components of some of these genes can definitely be switched off by epigenetic changes that occur under these stresses. And
And the things that are activated by authoritarianism and isolation and so on include an excess of serotonin production. And that causes a rigid tendency to conformism that at the same time is cooling the body, slowing metabolism, making it more passive, leaning towards learned helplessness, just by the excess of stress-induced serotonin excess. The serotonin, in turn, activates all of the stress-related other hormones, but its worst function is to slow the metabolism, increase inflammation, tending towards degeneration and death. And estrogen is the other chilling stress-related chemical that lowers the body temperature, predisposes it to more inflammation, and makes it more receptive to authoritarianism and creates a failure of adaptiveness.
Yeah. So all of this is a spiraling, a kind of a compounding factor, one negative thing after another, and it's in complete odds with a mindfulness mindset or a positive mindset, because the environment Well, it's not that the person's obviously got their mind set on mindfulness and they are not going to be subjugated by all of the control, for example, during this pandemic. Obviously, there are people that will be mindful of their own place in the universe, as it were, and are not going to allow this external stimuli to suppress them because they either have a very strong mindset based on positive affirmation and mindfulness, or distrust of what's going on, obviously. But that these changes, and just talk about a little bit about what these epigenetic changes can do in terms of their worst consequences, in terms of switching genes off or switching them on, in terms of inflammation and other pro-carcinogenic effects.
The whole idea of epigenetics is flexibility and reversibility. And so it's very antagonistic to all of the doctrines that say cancer is incurable, advanced heart disease and kidney disease are incurable, and so on. The epigenetic idea explains how they develop from bad environmental opportunities, and also potentially shows routes by which they can be reversed. So it's a very optimistic view in relation to health and development. And there, where the genetic view says you can only develop so far, if your genes are bad, you're going to be a sickly, unproductive person. The epigenetic approach says the genes are only a very sketchy determinant. Many other things determine our vitality. For example, the exposure prenatally to too much estrogen lowers the body temperature, reduces the growth of the brain, and predisposes to inflammatory diseases, obesity, and lifelong weakness. The exposure to extra glucose, simply adding glucose to the developing, gestating animal, or the hormones such as progesterone that provide a more reliable amount of glucose, increase the growth of the brain, the thickness of the cortex, the energy level, metabolic rate, and longevity. The bigger the brain is able to develop by these good circumstances, the longer the organism tends to live.
Yeah, very interesting. It's again, for people that are listening, I would encourage you to go online, and whilst it's not a definitively accurate, maybe, source of information, PubMed certainly have plenty of articles attesting to the science of epigenetics and attesting to the very thing that Dr. Pete's mentioning in terms of environmental enrichment as being positively favorable in the outcomes of various animal models for disease resistance and or recovery. So whilst it may say, not to me perhaps, but maybe some people who are listening have just caught the show, as I said, you really are not just what you eat, but you can become what you believe yourself to be in terms of positive affirmation and reinforcement, and that your thoughts really are far more powerful than people understand in terms of affecting their outcome, their physiology, and changing their manifestations of disease in their body or not. And that, as Dr. Pietzel mentioned, that it's a reversible situation. The genome that makes up who we are physically on the outside that people see, as well as inside chemically what people don't see and how we interact with things. It's very plastic, it's very fluid, and it's very dynamic. It's not at all fixed, as Dr. Peter said, that science, especially genetics, probably from the moment it was dreamt of as a tool by which to describe things, and errantly at that. But the genome itself is very, very flexible, and it's not a very specific determinant of your outcome, because epigenetics do play a big role in it, and actually this whole missing heritability is explained by epigenetics, and it's something that people should really take a look at. It's a pretty novel science, and it is a very worthy science for science's sake. Might sound a little nebulous to some people listening, that you can change the way you are by thinking differently, but this type of change can be described as an epigenetic change over time, and the very concepts of authoritarianism and isolation and going without and deficiency and lack, all of this breeds an inflammatory stressed state, which his only outcome generally is negative and energy decreasing. So certainly changing your mindset is a good way of getting some kind of restitution from this. And then obviously the chemical changes that happen. Dr. Pete, you've mentioned things like estrogen and serotonin, and these have certainly, unfortunately, been labeled as positive things in the medical field, but we're very mindful of the fact that these are very pro-inflammatory. In terms of epigenetics, I wanted to bring out, just for people to understand, or just highlight it in a fairly simplistic manner, that and I wasn't aware of this until I started looking, but when I was studying herbal medicine, the two principals were both Dutch who'd gone through the Second World War and had endured the famine of 1944 to 1945, which they called the Dutch Hunger Winter Famine. And I remember the professor who was describing the torture, if you like, because they were in such famine, because the Germans had cut off the food supply, that there was a time when the only thing that you could eat was daffodil bulbs. And they've done studies now on children from women who went through that, and these studies have shown a pretty clear link to certain genes being switched off, and that these people are certainly more prevalent in manifesting heart disease and schizophrenia and type 2 diabetes. And they're saying that they can link it fairly positively to the epigenetic changes that occurred as a result of this famine.
And
what about that, Dr. Pink?
We have a caller, too, after that.
Okay. All right, well, let's go ahead and take this first caller. Sorry, Dr. Pete. Let's take this first caller, then I'll ask your feedback on that Dutch hunger famine. So, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from, and what's your question?
Sorry, I hate to interrupt. You have a great dialogue going on a very important topic. But I have two separate questions. One relates to the product turpentine, or the ethers related to it. Back in, I think, 1899, if you looked in a medical textbook, I think there were like 45 different problems or illnesses that allegedly at the time were supposedly cured, or at least improved, by ingesting turpentine. Now when you look at any turpentine, or the mindset is, oh, it's poison. And perhaps there's some that's poison, but I just wanted to get a sense. Clearly, the pharmaceutical companies are not going to want you to be doing this, but back in 1899, do you believe that they were right? Forget about what's going on currently.
Currently, there is still research going on showing that the turpentine family, each type of conifer has its own variant of turpentine, but some of these are very, for example, stimulate wound healing, accelerate healing, and are anti-inflammatory, and others are antibiotic, a very important biological beneficial effects. And I don't know where this culture of fearing turpentine came from, but it happened to coincide with the disappearance of cheap turpentine as paint thinner. I used to very often use turpentine as my solvent for painting, but where it used to cost a couple of dollars a gallon, it's now up around $30 or $40 a gallon and almost impossible to get. It's
funny you say that, because I think I've called earlier and I had a problem with my shoulder. I tore my rotator cuff. I opted not to get surgery, but there is a variant of turpentine that I did on an empty stomach take, not a lot, but enough to, and literally within minutes, I'm talking minutes, the pain would disappear. I mean, almost exactly what you're saying. And so I don't know whether it sort of, I don't know that it kills parasites or bad creatures in your body, but which are maybe more likely to go to the wound site, but it certainly numbs them or reduces inflammation, as you said, in some fashion. To me, it's clearly everything you said has clearly been, I've already proven it. I just wanted to get your view. The other question relates to something I'd asked before on thyroid. You know, there's a lot of people who believe, and I believe that thyroid is so important and learned about it from you, but I'm not really one who feels that I would want to be reliant on any sort of thyroid mechanism or medicine, excuse me. So the other approach that Broda Barnes mentions and others mention is to actually take iodine. And I know I've heard some of your answers on that, and maybe you'll have a different view in the context of the way I'm going to ask this. But in the current environment we're in, you know, you've got breads, you've got all these other halogens that compete and block iodine. So it seems to me it's harder. I shouldn't say it this way. Is it reasonable, without taking kelp, with all the, just to take straight iodine, perhaps from the earth, and essentially a bioavailable amount, very small amount, that ultimately might be enough to help your thyroid do what it's supposed to do without having to compete with these other, or to get around, circumvent the use of these haloids that your thyroid doesn't want to use? You know what I mean?
In the last 20 years or so, there have been several dozen studies showing that thyroid disease corresponds to the introduction of iodized salt.
I think that's a bad product. So the other thing is, as you'll agree, and I don't want to say we're cherry-picking studies here, that, you know, people say, well, aspirin causes, it burns a hole in your stomach. Well, yeah, sure, if you take a whole bottle. But they don't tell you they put a whole bottle in the test, but they want to do the research, so you buy their other products. So the same could be true of iodine, frankly. But I don't disagree. So if you took the colored iodine or the iodized salt, yeah, there's all kinds of other toxins. But if you could get a pure form of bioavailable iodine in a very small amount where there's nothing else, it seems like a reasonable thing to do. Tell me why.
Over 1 milligram a day, I think, is risky.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking like 600 micrograms, 500 to 600, one drop, literally. Anyway, I was going to test it. I'll let you know how it goes. But you don't think that's not crazy? The things you're talking about, I agree with. You can't trust any research since you were in school, right? They're all lying. Look at COVID. I mean, look at this. It's not. They can't even isolate it. So. I think you do have to do it yourself and test it in a reasonable manner. So anyway, I'm going to give that a shot, unless you think. So you're saying if you use 500 milligrams and it's pure, close to pure iodine, and doesn't have other toxins, it's probably not a bad thing to test, right? It's not
very
crazy.
Safe.
Sorry.
And I think turpentine is something that really needs lots of fresh research now, in terms of what we know about the communication of cells and cytokines the process of inflammation and anti-inflammation.
Whoops. Sorry, I dropped him. We got another caller, though.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for your call, caller. Let's get another call in. Caller, where are you from? What's your question?
From Southern Humboldt. And my question is this. I don't know what really iodine and turpentine have to do with the topic, which is epigenetics, as far as I could tell. And I heard the guest in very general terms the how epigenetics works, but I'm wondering if we could get a little more specific about how that really works, and if the guest could talk about the mechanism for affecting and turning on and off the DNA, which is how my understanding of epigenetics works, having to do with DNA methylation and histamine modification and those mechanisms. So could the guest actually talk in more specific terms about how epigenetics works biochemically and about the limitations of what you can actually do with epigenetics, because it's not like I heard the host say that you can do anything and be anything and that sort of thing. My understanding of epigenetics is it's very limited in how it can really affect the biochemistry, in that it does not change the DNA, it just modifies whether that DNA is turned on in particular cells or not turned on. So the actual amount of documented evidence that epigenetics can really change our lives as human beings is pretty limited, and it doesn't mean that our experiences, like being under a lot of stress or not getting enough to eat or those kinds of real stressors in human beings, it can't affect us, and that's what epigenetics is studying. But the idea that we can do anything with epigenetics is just a misuse, in my opinion, of what's out there actually in the science. So could the guest talk a little bit more about the DNA methylation and the actual mechanisms for which epigenetics can change the whether our DNA gets activated or not in certain cells. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call. Dr. Pete, did you get the grasp of that question there?
The attachment of methyl groups to DNA has got the most interest and credibility among the standard genetics workers. And in principle, with stress and aging, we lose the ability to activate genes. And so the general idea is that our DNA becomes too methylated, turning off massive amounts of genes so that we're very slow to renew our cell proteins. But certain islands of DNA become under-methylated as a result of hormone imbalances and stress and so on. And if you have a tumor repressor, which becomes methylated, you stop repressing tumors. And if you have an under-methylation of something which is considered an oncogene, you can activate oncogenes by losing the inhibiting methylation. And So the connection of DNA methylation to stress and cancer development and aging is getting a huge amount of research. But there are the second most popular mechanism of epigenetics for the conventional crowd is changes in the histones, which are they are able to block activation of massive amounts of DNA. And acetylation, there is methylation of histones and also attachment of acetyl groups. And when acetyl is attached, it lets the DNA become active. And so deacetylators become DNA gene suppressive. And there's a lot of research on that too. And now the micro-RNA regulatory systems has tremendously complicated the area. But the idea of the unexpressed 97 or 98% of our DNA, which doesn't make genes, this is clearly involved in regulatory processes that are not genetic in the ordinary sense, but obviously contribute to the epigenetic momentum that the organism has. And people are suggesting that a failure of that is involved in the old age and the increased susceptibility to viruses and degeneration. And there are probably others, but the whole idea of the mechanism of how these changes of function and structure without changing the actual gene composition. The whole repertoire that the organism uses is just now really being suspected. And I think the emphasis on DNA methylation has been taken out of proportion. Estrogen and progesterone are both major regulators of gene methylation and demethylation and histone acetylation and deacetylation. So the hormones and the systems energy largely regulated by thyroid hormone and the balance between carbon dioxide and lactate. Carbon dioxide being the quieting, efficiency-promoting anti-inflammatory substance, lactate being the excitatory inflammation-promoting de-energizing substance going with a low metabolic efficiency.
Okay, well, you're listening to KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM. From now till the end of the show, if people want to call in, we can get a couple of one or two quick questions in. The number 7079239213911. I'll say that once again, 7079233911. Guest speaker, Dr. Raymond Peet.
I had actually just told the caller who was on that he probably wasn't. Well, I told him he had to get it out in 30 seconds, and he actually just hung up. So you have like 4 minutes to clean up, and we have an underwriter to thank at the end. So that's super awesome.
Okay, so we're probably getting too close to the top of the hour to take any more calls then. Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Peet,
You're saying basically then, to sum up, there's an energy situation when the organism is fully energized and there's plenty of CO2 and there is a active thyroid and metabolism is working the way it should be, there is much less chance of any epigenetic changes taking place that would destabilize the system.
Energy is the thing that protects and guides the proper expansion of our structures. The energy increase under the influence of thyroid and oxidative metabolism and carbon dioxide, this is a constant ongoing flow which is tending constantly to complexify our structure, building structure constantly. If your energy fails, then it goes the other way. Structure decomplexifies and deteriorates.
Okay, well, I probably should stop you there. Thank you so much for giving your time again. Dr. Pete, I'll sign off with giving information about how people can reach you after this moment.
Okay, very good, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so for people who've tuned in this evening, Dr. Raymond Pete, www.raypete.com. He's got a fully referenced library, if you will, of papers, newsletters that he's written, backed up and fully referenced. Epigenetics, another one of those subjects that he's weighed in on again. He is a living testimony to further knowledge outside of science for science's sake, because he's looking not for the money, but he's looking for the truth. And so plenty of information on his website. I really wanted to get to, and I very quickly just say a little bit about this, I really wanted to get to talk about Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, who was a medical doctor, died in 2015, but had a pretty successful practice treating pancreatic cancer patients who were rapidly progressive. It's very aggressive disease, rapidly fatal. But his speech, there's plenty of audios online where you can hear him. In particular, one was titled "Why Clinical Trials for Cancer Cures Are Futile." Somebody else in the medical field who really wanted to be altruistic and actually help people with cancer came up with a protocol that was definitely treating people, but was absolutely dogged along the way at every step by the National Institutes of Health and various other organizations who did not want him to be successful in doing this. And so there are always alternatives out there. The internet's a great source for information, but watch out for misleading information, because that's also very, very relevant to the search. So maybe next month we'll get into Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez if we don't wrap up the epigenetics part of it. So our website is westernbotanicalmedicine.com, and we can be reached Monday through Friday. We have an 800 number, 1-888-WBM-HERB. If you like, my email address is andrew@westernbotanicalmedicine.com. So until the same third Friday of May from 7 till 8, we'll see you next month. Thank you.
Herbal Med RX creates organic herbal products, including bath and body oils, salves, deodorants, herbal teas, CBD products, essential oil blends, and more. Visit www.herbalmedrx.com to see all products and events. You can reach Sue Lukasha at Herbal Med RX by phone at 209-296-2120. Get ready. Shaka and Shyla are here, so you can step out on a wing and a prayer.